This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of September 21st. I'm John Gibson, and with me, geez, what time is it? Late on a Sunday night, early on a Monday morning is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. I'm sort of like the, I'm not really a morning person anymore.
And I'm not really a night owl anymore.
So,
but we're going to make it work, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So I'm going to make it work.
Yeah. For me, it's not a stretch. I wish I could get off of this cycle of getting up at around noon and getting to sleep at 3 or 4 in the morning, but it looks like another round of that tonight.
Well, for you and me both, bud. All right. On this week's show, we have no chat with a player or coach. So we're going to go straight to high heat. You guys are going to be the guests and we're going to answer some of your questions. And we're going to look at the playoff giants, the falling Eagles, and hit a few notes. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so both Jim and I tried to get an interview. It was Jim's turn, I'll have you know that, so I didn't try as hard early on, but neither one of us was successful, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, it seemed like it was gonna, but I'll tell you, I don't mean to be mean, but one of the artifacts or effects of the coronavirus pandemic has been for kind of authoritarian regimes to assert their ability to, you know, restrict access to either human rights or various other parts of people's lives.
Right. And, exercising their strength.
Yeah, exactly. And I've seen this before, and you see this sometimes with some teams, PR departments in the past, and where if somebody's in big demand, the PR department can get really pushy. The PR guys are like, "You're talking to our star without our approval." And I'm going, "Dude, we're just standing here talking. Who said you could
settle down there, Skippy?"
Exactly. Like, who gave you permission to stand? And we've seen it, and I guess most infamously with the Hanshin Tigers. And I asked a colleague about how a colleague who has been going to the ballpark more often has been reaching out to teams more vigorously than I have. And he said, when you call the Tigers and ask for an interview over the telephone or internet, pretty much you don't even have to finish saying, "I'd like an interview," before you can hear people snickering in the background.
Hashtag high heat.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we've been very fortunate up to now. And someone actually asked on the MPB Reddit or subreddit or whatever it is that I set up an account there. Mm-hmm. And they asked, "When are you guys going to get some Tigers on?" And I said, "We are trying."
We are trying.
And with the Giants, I said earlier on in this whole thing that I wouldn't name names, but it's time to name names. The Giants, you know, I've sent 3 requests and they've been smacked back at me like a bad fastball.
Yeah. So, and I'm not going to burn bridges yet because I think there are other people holding the torch at the other end. I'll let them do it. But, you know, this was a case of the player was ready. The team seemed ready. I think it's just not time. The timing wasn't right, but, you know, sometimes I don't mean this to be mean, but when there's a vacuum, somebody fills it. And there was a player who's a first-year player, and he doesn't want to step on toes, so he asked the team. And if you ask the team, "Can I do this?" any of you who've worked for a Japanese company, is it okay if I do this normal thing? "Well, we don't have that in our manual, so therefore, I guess the answer is no."
Or, yeah, this time it's not on the agenda at the moment, so
exactly.
Let's hold off.
Yeah, yeah, I was like, put my pencil on the left side of the table. Well, don't. If you had done it, nobody had asked nobody. If you hadn't asked, it would have been no problem. But as soon as you ask, it's an issue. So it was kind of a thing. It was, we found, I think for, you know, just to be honest, I think we just found a gap in their bureaucratic method. And when that happens, sometimes things can ground to a halt if you're trying to get permissions.
Right. So that's just one of the stories. But we've been really fortunate up to now. And,
and I will name names, and I'll say the Nippon Ham Fighters have been superb. I mean, like, how can we help?
Yeah, I know that. I think everybody knows the teams that have been very cooperative because we've had the guests on the show.
The Eagles have been relatively helpful. But a lot, you know, again, the teams also have more. And I'll be fair, as much as, you know, I'm not normally fair, but I'll be fair and say that the teams are also dealing with the coronavirus, and they're, you know, their guys are not all on the same schedule and on the same travel. I think they're traveling a little lighter, fewer people.
That would make sense.
Their PR guys are like not always with the team as much as they used to be.
Okay.
You know, and when we arranged the Alan Busenitz interview, the person I was in contact wasn't with the team in I think they were in Tokorozawa.
Okay, right.
So it's not easy, and I appreciate for all you PR guys who are, you know, giving it your best shot. I really appreciate it.
And I think the listeners do, and you know I do. So let's move along. Let's not dwell. We can't have Alonzo Powell on the show every week, but you know, I know he's there for us if we need him, and we'll probably be calling him soon. Anyway, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so the first one comes from Dimitri, and it comes via email.
And he says, thanks for the show. I always love to listen, even when I'm fuming, like when you discussed the concept of sample size in last week's show. Now, this is 2 weeks ago. You said, and he's talking about me, John, you said that the sample size is an arbitrary, completely arbitrary word that has no numeric value, that all these baseball nerds like to assign to everything they like to quantify, except sample size has none of that. And he noted the time. That was 26 minutes, 15 seconds into the last show. He continues, nobody has qualified this thing. Nobody has said, you know what a good sample size is, this number. I haven't heard it. Have you? That's at 30 minutes, 53 seconds. Now, this is objectively false. It is not true that it is not quantified. Sample size is a well-characterized concept, and there are various methods to calculate the appropriate sample size for a given question you want to address. Baseball is even a textbook example when people are taught about sample size and significance. Literally, it really is used as an easy example in stats textbooks. Could it be that you actually meant something else? Do you want to clarify this? Thanks, Dimitri.
All right. So I'm glad, Dimitri, thank you very much for noting this matter. And obviously we can't debate this because I'm always going to have the last say here on the show. So I just first want to thank you because I actually think I've said more controversial things throughout the years. So I didn't think this was very controversial, especially because I went on to explain my argument, and I'll give you this. I didn't do a good job of articulating my position in my initial statement. And when I basically put the notion that sample size is this nebulous and arbitrary number that's out there that's not quantified, but I went on to explain it. And I think you latched onto that first statement like a police dog on a training arm pad, and you didn't let go. And when we were exchanging Twitter messages, all the examples that you brought up at that time were examples of me talking about people, not the sample size. And then when we got to the email, you actually, with the timestamps that you used, followed it up by stating the first portion of my comment, which was after I could actually hear Jim either steaming or snickering. I couldn't make out which one it was. I think he was both. He was kind of angry.
I was pretty much steaming. There was actually the smoke alarm went off in my apartment.
So anyway, but I did follow up by saying clearly I thought that the application of the phrase in generally offered arguments that come up on a lot of podcasts or a lot of sports shows that I watch, the actual application of the phrase is poorly used. It's poorly laid out. And what I mean by that is these people either misuse sample size. So they say, yes, it's a small sample size, but, and then they go on to use some stats that they need or want to use in a particular argument. And like I said, I could sense Jim fuming when I said it, but I think I made the point later on that I'm talking about the way people use it and that they don't give a quantity. So a lot of times people say, oh, well, it's still a small sample size, but maybe it's not at that point. But we don't ever know because we don't give numbers. And one of the things Dimitri did on Twitter was he mentioned the fact that I don't like to look at the standings, you know, until about 2 months have gone by. But see, for me, I never say small sample size or large sample size.
But it's the same thing.
I give a time frame.
Sure.
But and again, that's it is the difference. I assign a number. I quantify what I'm talking about, and I try to give figures. I don't say small and large. Small and large, those are not figures. Those are not numbers. That's just an arbitrary. It could mean a lot of different things to different people. When I say small sample size, it could be a different number from what you think is small sample size, and large sample size could be a just totally different number. So that's what I mean when I say the whole thing. Now I know that the science is there. I know it's out there and it exists, but the application and the way people present it when they're making arguments, I think is frankly abused by many who really don't even take time to offer us anything that has a quantification that lets us know what they're talking about. They just want to use the phrase sample size to make a point, and that's how they do it. So my argument is not with the science. It is with the people and whoever we hear who make that statement in that manner. And you, a lot of times, like I said, you hear me offer up a time frame. You hear me offer up some numbers, or I say like it, I just say it's too early to decide. Even with a guy we might talk about in the coming months, Koji Fukutani of the Dragons, he has pitched well as a starter, but we've seen him pitch well as a starter. So what? I'm not convinced that he's going to be that guy next year, or even for the rest of this year. But he has pitched well, and
what you are saying is essentially the sample size of his performance is too small for you to consider it a valid indicator of what he can do.
I didn't say that.
No, but that's what you are saying.
Anybody can interpret and reword and rephrase things that you want to, and that's fine. That's another way of saying it.
Yes, I agree.
I'm saying I haven't seen him do enough. I'm not going to use the phrase sample size because I want to put in, I don't actually know what, how many starts or how many appearances in a season or in a career for a guy before we understand what he is.
The answer is never. There is no number because it's, I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting you, but I thought maybe.
Oh, this time?
Only once. You only get that once a month, and so I'll.
We can barely get through the opening, and now we're here, and now you're apologizing. But
I'm only going to apologize once a month.
Jesus, that's starting today. But anyway, no, that's fine, and I don't know what it is either, and that's part of that nebulous thing that I'm talking about with sample size. Do we really honestly know? I mean, sure, the science is out there. But when we are making statements about guys, about their career arcs, about their career paths, do we know? Do we really honestly know?
No, you never know. And you never know because everything has an element of randomness. Whatever happens, you don't know how much of it is is simply how much of it is due to a person's individual ability, how much of it is due to the competition, how much of it is due to the park, you know, the wind, the defense, whatever. Whatever you're measuring, you never know, you know, how much of B is caused by A.
I totally agree. I even have a story about it. I went when I was back in the States for that short stint, 2003, 2004.
It seemed like a long stint to me when I was trying to get you back here.
Yeah, it was long for me too in some other ways. But anyway, I was covering a high school team and I kept getting calls from a coach who said, you got to come out and see this player. And he had great stats and everything. And I'm like, well, okay, but you're a really small high school. And, you know, I've heard about these kinds of guys before. So anyway, I went out to see him and I didn't just go out to see one game. I started following him around for a couple of weeks to put the whole thing into context. Mm. Because if you see a guy one time or two times, you might see something great or really bad and then make a decision. So I wanted to follow him around and I did. And, you know, I saw that, and this was a baseball player in this instance, but I did the same thing with a basketball player before as well. And I could just see that, you know, I could see things in the swing. Now, I wasn't as good at evaluating talent, but even back then, there's things that you can see. And the things that I could see were things or instances that you just mentioned, which was the competition level, the parks, and the fact that the coaches and other players on the bench were keeping score and marking hits for him on balls that, you know, we're talking about high school kids. You know, they didn't want to always get in front of a ball that was hard hit. We're talking a guy who had some strength, but he was, you know, he was not big in stature and was using an aluminum bat. And it just, I just put things together and said, look, you know, I don't see it. You know, mm-hmm. I don't see where I need to go out and cover this guy all the time where he's not the kind of athlete I think is a huge scholarship kind of player. So I told the coach, look, you know, good luck, but I'm not going to be out there that much driving around.
I hear you. That's hard. You know, as a journalist, there are people who want stories told, and I can't resist a good story, but sometimes you got to say to them, it is a good story at this point, but right now it ain't.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And I feel bad about that because I hate to disappoint people, but I'm also, you know, a human being.
Right. You are.
Well, thank you for vouching for me.
I haven't seen you in a while, but I know this to be true. Okay. So hopefully I've explained it a little bit better. And most of it for me is not the numbers and the science. It is 90% the way people use the word and the phrase sample size. Yeah. And they don't tell us, you know, if they were to tell us, okay, we need at least this many at-bats from this kind of player in this kind of situation. I know the factors are all different, but you need to present that. If it's going to be something that's scientific, you need to present that to the listener. Otherwise, it's not only not quantified for the listener, it's not fair for the person you're talking about either.
Well,
so that's my opinion. But I do thank you for bringing that up, Dimitri. Although, like I said, I really think I've said more controversial things through the years than this.
Not that I remember at this instant. give me a minute. I read that again, and I thought there's a couple of points here, and I certainly agree with some of the things you're saying. And I think some of the confusion about what you were saying was because it was in juxtaposition. It's often not exactly the words we use and what we intend, but it's sometimes the surrounding context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you put up a picture in a painting and it has no frame, it looks different than the picture in the paint, you know, the picture with a frame. It changes things. And part of it was the juxtaposition and the language you used, which was, you know, you used a word that some would consider pejorative, you know, nerds.
It was
bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the nerds are bad, but baseball math is okay. And so that, you know, that put it in a context of A is good and B is bad. And I think we want to get away from that, as you have tried to do so. And I think, and I agree with you in the sense that it's how people use the language. Now, whenever I don't have a problem with someone saying, you know, it's a small number of events, but this is, you know, this is how it happened. You know, it's 10 at bats, but you know, it's just, it's kind of a fun, you know, it's a fun thing. At that stage, it's not a meaningful thing, but it's a fun thing. And I get that when I hear it. But having said that, what you said, something you said just now really hit it on the head, which is when especially people in the media are trying to make a point. Now, they could be people in the media in a blog, and they could be trolls on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the sort of the latter type that tends to get our ire more often than not. But the historic use of numbers in by people in sports is not, you know, as Bill James once said, was not to educate, but to sort of illustrate, to make a point without actually getting to it wasn't about learning what is true. It's, I've got a story about a player who's good, so I'm going to select the numbers that make him look good. You know, it's decoration. Use numbers to decorate stories, like photos.
And or decorate a point.
He's a good hitter, so let's say, you know, oh, he hits 300, so he's a quality player, which is two things that aren't not necessarily true, but never stopped any sports writer from saying it at least once in their life.
I mean, well, I heard a phrase on TV a long, long time ago, and I think it's applicable to stats in some cases. The phrase was, God uses the good ones, the bad ones use God. And I think we could turn that around and use it with stats sometimes because, you know, don't let the stats, don't use the stats, let the stats use you. And I think that's what I'm getting at is that sometimes when I hear these stats, it's that people are trying to make a point and they're trying to, and at least finding at least some aspect that they can twist and use for themselves to their benefit.
Sure. Again, this is the point of, you know, see, this is my point. This is supports my point of view as opposed to, I mean, really the best work. The most knowledge is gained by asking questions. Is this true? How close do we know this is true? Do we know, is there evidence that it's true? Is there evidence that it's false? Not A is a good hitter and this is why, but is A a good hitter is a much more interesting question, okay, what's good? And what's good about him? And, you know, and let's look at all the evidence we have instead of just the stuff that looks good in my story.
Gotcha.
So that's good. But that's a traditional thing for the media is to do that. And I mean, we had this horrible example. I don't remember if it was, how many years ago it was. It was before Ichiro Suzuki was traded to the New York Yankees, and the Yankees came to, the Mariners came to Japan for an opening series. Remember that? 2000.
I do.
One or two. Anyway, yeah. It was his last year with the Mariners, and some person with the Yomiuri Shimbun, we were instructed to translate the Japanese stories into English. And one of the writers wrote, we all know that, you know, it'll be important for Ichiro to have a good game because we all know that how somebody does on opening day is an indicator of how they will do in the rest of the season. And I remember that one?
I do remember that.
And I just laughed. I think I said to John, if you ever write this, I'm going to smack you upside the head.
And I thought, if I ever wrote this, I would have been smacked upside the head already. That's why I wrote
Perhaps,
it.
Perhaps, yeah. We would have to call the company concussion protocols. So, so that's the thing that people often do that. And people in the media have, you know, fans are as bad as us, and I'm not immune to that. I mean, I am brief with explanations just because you can't you can't fill an article with every which way of analysis. Articles aren't analysis, they're articles. So anyway, moving along, but I thought it was a good thing. And the only thing I have to say about sample size is, I mean, it is a thing, and it is a thing, but if the window is open, you know, is the window open? Yes, it is. Well, is it really open or is it a little open? I mean, it depends on what you want, and sample size is like that too. Essentially, the numbers, and I'm not a statistician, so I apologize to you statisticians. It essentially works on a expression called confidence level. How confident are you that this reflects, you know, this number reflects A? And when it's very low, I mean, typically it goes like, I'll do it really briefly. Let's say a guy has 500 at bats and he hits 300. You could tell that in his context, you might say something like there's an 85% confidence interval that his real batting average is, what did I say, 250? If a guy hits 250 and 500 at bats, we'll say, okay, given the number of at-bats, we'll assume with 85% chance that his true batting average is somewhere between 215 and 280, 290 or something.
All right. Well, or yeah. Something is the operative phrase, because right. If we really try to explain all this stuff, we will never finish.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just saying that. So the more numbers you get, the smaller that area of where you're confident gets, you know, to where, oh, he's between a 240 and a 260 hitter. Okay, now we really know. But that's what happens, is that range shrinks the bigger the sample size. So, and it depends on, and the sample size depends on, as I said last time, how variable the thing you're trying to measure is. If it's something that's very independent of outside forces, like home runs, strikeouts, and walks, relatively independent, then the samples are smaller. So anyway, okay. Moving along.
All right. Yes. Brakes. Hit the brakes, Jim. Stop.
I'm pumping.
All right. All right. The next one is from Michael Westbay, and this came in a text message or SMS, a short message across the phone.
He says, "Hi, guys. I just listened to the latest show. Nikon Sports reported on September 7th that the government had given NBB the go-ahead to increase to half capacity, or 20,000, whichever is lower. What is what the J-League came up with. Soon after the NPB J-League task force met on Saturday, and I'm assuming this was September 5th, I started getting email from teams announcing that they were going to about half capacity minus 1,000. Teams that thought about it a little longer are issuing 5,000 more tickets for games starting the 19th of September. As for what areas are mostly blank, they're the cheap seats. The Alps at Cochin. You don't get to keep the bleacher bums out of the outfield there. And the outfield and wing at Yokohama. And the upper deck and a few domes."
Thank you for the update, Michael. And I saw a similar report this year. But my opinion from last week was based on the actions of the country during the early times of the coronavirus situation. And I have no doubt that the government is backing this. And when I say backing, I mean arms folded, stern looks toward the NPB brass and saying, hey, make it happen. And look, I saw these games over the weekend with an increased number of fans, and I was just uncomfortable watching. I don't make a decision based on what the politicians say or what the government is saying. I want to look at medicine and science. That's really what I care about. And to see the stadiums with so many people, they all had masks except when they were drinking, which was a lot of the time, and they weren't yelling except when something exciting happened. So pretty often during a baseball game. But I understand it's a big moneymaker for the league, but it just made me uncomfortable to see all those people sitting so close together and cheering. And we had 162 newly confirmed cases in Tokyo today. So I just believe this is not a health-driven decision. It's a money-driven decision, and it's fueled by Olympic-sized dreams. That's the way I feel about it.
I think that's true. As you said, the NPB's a stance towards playing games at all.
Right.
And towards allowing fans into the stands. And essentially, every time they've actually taken a stance, it has mirrored what the government has said. Before,
ironically, coincidentally.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when they said we need to be careful, essentially, so we can have the Olympics, they said we need to be careful. You know, we're going to shut it down. I mean, they shut down the. I would do another thing, and I will say this. I wrote it on my blogs a few times, but if you actually look at the government's numbers of infections, they're cruising along like almost like Japan doesn't know the coronavirus really doesn't exist in Japan until March 24th.
Right.
The numbers are very low. And this is, they've already gone into the mode of, we're not going to allow spectators, you know, we're not going to allow spectators in events, or we're not going to encourage it. We're going to ask teams not to play. We're going to reduce the, you know, like it's critical. But the infections just go on like, wow, we're going to be out of the woods here really easily because it's very flat. And then on March 24th, the day they announced that the Olympics had been postponed, they went through the roof, which tells you that those numbers probably didn't reflect reality. They were, suggests to me that they were suppressing the number of infections to make it look like Japan could hold the Olympics this past summer. So that's one. And number two, basically until they postponed the Olympics, NPB was still looking at dates in April to start the season. And they were still talking about having fans in the stands.
Right.
As soon as they postponed the Olympics, they went, okay, shut up.
Right.
Now it's health. We've got to talk about health so that we can have the Olympics next year. And the third thing is, and there's four points here. And the third point is that when they did announce, as Michael said, I had noticed this, that the teams have decided to, the baseball teams have decided not to push the limits, but to go close to the limits so as to look good, but still expect admitting fans. And I will give NPB credit for this. And I don't know if it's deserved or not, but there have been zero reports of fans being infected at games.
Right. And that's what I was wondering when I see all these fans. I'm thinking, well, you know, somebody's out there who could be a spreader who's spreading to the players. That's another thing that concerned me.
Well, that would be more of a concern in a dome stadium.
I think more, but I think it's still a concern in outdoor stadiums.
My concern has been among the fans and the people working in the stadium. In that, in the indoor areas of the stadiums, because even the outdoor stadiums have indoor facilities. And the other one is, you know, bringing people into the, you know, like Tokyo Dome, which is surrounded by shops and restaurants that people use.
Yeah.
And before and after the games, and crowding extra people onto the trains to go to them. To me, that was a big concern, and the people who worked in the ballparks. So, okay. So that was three. And the final one is this, which is, this is not related to baseball, but on Saturday, I understand Kyoto News did a story about the likelihood that the December's Tokyo Grand Slam judo tournament they have decided to postpone it. And one of the reasons for postponing it is if there is a mass infection, according to the story, if there is a mass infection at the tournament, then that could wreck the chances to have the Olympics.
Right. Yeah. That's as soon as you said that, that's where I was going.
Yeah, exactly. So essentially right now, everything is being driven by whether or not it will affect the Olympics as it has been since March. I believe.
No surprise.
I'm saying is, you are on it 100%.
No surprise. All right, let's go to the next one. This one comes from Glenn in Tokyo via email, and he says, "Hey, John and Jim, happy semi-lockdown, etc. Thanks for making one day a week to continue to seem to be somewhat normal with the podcast. A fully masked glance at the standings sees the Marines in second, but if you look a little closer, their overall numbers seem to be trending a little worse than last season. Run differential, ERA, batting average, etc. What gives? Can Jim's machine that goes ping tell us how they have managed to win 44 as of Friday and stay in contention while not appearing to improve on 2019? It cannot all be the Buffalo effect, can it?" Jim.
Well, Glenn, thank you for the high praise. It's always a joy to hear the listeners, be nice to us, because we're throwing stuff out there that isn't always, we're humans. We make mistakes. So that we can brighten something up is a great joy for us too. Now, as for my machine that goes ping, it's in the shop. And there's no word. It's in the Ruby software programming language text editor shop right now, and it's being worked on, and I don't know when it's going to be ready. Hopefully soon. But I think my answer, and first of all, I have to give you a shout out for the headline in the email, which was "Marines are not allowed to die without permission." Which is a line, and which goes with the fully masked question, because it's a line from Full Metal Jacket, Stanley Kubrick movie about Marines.
Yeah, I saw the movie, but I was so young.
Okay, you braggart.
No, I was so young in many ways. Not just
young
physically.
Guy. Yeah. John's five years younger. Well, 5.5 years younger than me. So, Okay. Anyway, the fully masked Marine treatment. I mean, just at an eyeball glance, what you pointed out, yes, and John and I were talking about this, is that they have allowed more runs than they've scored, but yet they are from Saturday, and now they are 12 games above 500. Allowing more runs than they score, and it's basically there's no rationale for that. Sometimes this happens. It's just a sort of a short term aberration. I mean, there are things that affect it. Do they have good veteran pinch hitters? Do they have a veteran bench? Do they have a good bullpen? You know, things that will help them win tight games. And the only thing I could think of is that now Yamashita has been quite good, their closer this year. He's been more successful than we're used to seeing him be, more reliable.
Yeah, that
I mean,
is
not that
true.
He hasn't blown up a couple of games, but he's just jumped right back on and been like the pitcher we expect him to be. And the other thing is, I think the addition of Hirokazu Sawamura has been really good. And of course, the other one is their ability to beat the SoftBank Hawks into, it's like a comic book what they do to them. I don't know where that has to do with that, but they certainly have helped their spot in the playoffs by beating the team they have to beat.
Yeah, all I know is, they started to win games that sometimes they had no business winning. For instance, they had a base running mistake or defensive issue that they played through, or they made pitching mistakes that weren't hit. And they won these close games. And a lot of it, for me, just watching and, having played sports, it was a thing about confidence that they could overcome whatever mistakes that they made. And I think that shows, I mean, obviously you can't measure those kinds of things, and we always talk about it. We often talk about it. Athletes, our interview subjects always talk about it, having some confidence. And we had it last time we had a interview it was Matt Moore last week, throw the pitch with conviction. And I think those things just lend to you winning games, even though you may have made some mistakes along the way. It's you know, that's part of the journey sometimes. And, you know, we saw that Sunday night here when they played a game against the Fighters that they had no business winning this game. They end up winning 5-3 because in part because of the mistakes that the Fighters made imploding, but they just gave them the opportunity to tie the score. The Marines won that game in the extra inning frame, you know, granted against an inexperienced pitcher and all that, but they got the hits, they got it done. And that's what matters. It doesn't really matter all the time what the garbage that you discard along the side of the path that you're going. You know, you can't take everything with you when you get to your destination. You got to use things and keep going. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but anyway, if I were manager Kimiyasu Kudo of the SoftBank Hawks, I would really fear this team when it comes to playoff time, because if anything, they're going to have a lot of confidence going up against SoftBank when the playoffs come, no matter where they're playing. So
yeah,
they are punching above their weight, but they're also, they're hitting hard, you know?
Yeah. I mean, at some point, you know, confidence is important. And I think what you said is very likely. I mean, we don't know it, but I think it's very likely true. You know, that teams win games they're not expected to, that they, you know, they feel better about games that they're not in, that, you know, it helps. It can't hurt. Over a long period of time, of course, if you don't score runs and you give them away, you're not going to keep it up. I mean, you see this, but then you also see teams like the 1990 Cincinnati Reds, who are probably my favorite example of this, which is a team that basically... they won the World Series by being the Marines. You know, they were basically a team that didn't seem to have to ever in the entire season have the offense and defense they needed to be, you know, to be there at the end, but they were. And then they beat a team that was, in my opinion, far better than they were. But, you know, who cares? They were the champions. That's all that matters. It's not about really about who's better. It's about who wins the championship.
Exactly. Exactly.
So yeah, I think the confidence is an issue. I think they are eventually going to get better. I mean, and the last thing, I mean, I excuse me, they're either going to get better quantitatively and, you know, in terms of runs and runs allowed, or they're not going to continue to play as well as they are. I mean, that's just the thing that happens. Teams cannot keep giving away more runs than they score and keep winning. The last thing I would say is just looking at the numbers, I see basically the Hawks, who are playing very well and not winning quite as many games as they should, because that happens too. Mm-hmm. And then I see the Marines, the Eagles, the Lions, and the Fighters basically being four versions of the same team.
Yeah.
These guys are essentially interchangeable. They all have their flaws, but the Marines are the ones who've been riding it, and the Eagles are the ones who've been taking the punches to the gut. And then there's the Oryx Buffaloes, who are going like, how do we get to mediocre?
Yeah. Can somebody point us
to the gutter? We're trying to crawl up to it.
Yes.
Hashtag high heat.
And one other thing I want to mention about the Marines that I've noticed having watched them this season is they're able to play whatever kind of baseball they need to in certain situations. If they need to play power baseball, it seems sometimes they come up with a power, you know, extra base hit. If they need to steal bases and play small ball, they can play small ball and do that. If they need to string some hits together or play really good defensive ball, they can put guys out there who can do that. Their
offense is more varied than it has been in a few years. I know the addition last year, Brandon Laird, helped a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly Leonis Martin has helped that quite a bit, and the development of, well, I think the renaissance of a couple of the players who've been having useful seasons, like Ikuhiro Kiyota. I mean, he's not going to break down any doors, but he looks like a useful player now after not really looking that way for a few years.
Yeah.
And the NCAA Inoue, who had the great start to the season, now is looking
right.
Like,
yeah, they're getting consistent contributions from a number of guys,
which the Marines have to do because they don't, as we've said, I think other than Landis Martin, they don't really have an MVP, anybody who's going to win an MVP in the next 3 years.
But they're able to change and meld into whatever they need, and that helps, I think, when they're playing certain teams. And perhaps that's one of the reasons they're beating SoftBank, is SoftBank doesn't really have a good gauge on what they're going to do. But anyway, let's move along. Let's make a four-seam transition, talk about a little bit about the Central League now and the Giants, who I've already proclaimed the Central League winners with about 40 games to play here.
Did I hear a fanfare when you proclaimed it?
No, nothing at all.
What's up with that? I mean, you should expect a red carpet, I mean, Shinosuke Abe came up.
I was going to get to that. But first, let's mention that their magic number is 32. They had lost a few games in a row this past week, but stopped that losing streak on Sunday. And I guess, obviously, I think they're going to win. So let's assume they're going to win and be the representative of the Central League in the Japan Series. Why would a team like that bring up its farm team manager to replace a coach with 40 games? And of course, the coach is just ill. He's supposed to be back. This is a temporary thing, but they bring up Shinosuke Abe to be on the bench. It just didn't make sense to me. I didn't have any time to read articles about why they would do it. Did you hear anything, or what's your opinion on it?
I think my opinion is the same as is the first response, is they want to see how people respond to Abe being on the bench. I heard somebody saying, first of all, I think it's hard to tell that Abe is on the bench, because if one of the things Shinosuke Abe has done for years is before the game, is he would hit fungos as a player.
That was part of his
pregame routine. He might, typically he'd go out and hit 10 or 12 fungos. So maybe when he's doing that now, I think somebody said, let's get that guy in the lineup. In fact, I think that after he announced his retirement, as players often do, he had sort of second thoughts and said, I kind of wish I was playing. I think that had to do with the layoff as well, the long layoff, and he felt particularly good this summer. And I think somebody...
Well, yeah, he wasn't doing all that work to stay in shape. Of course you feel better.
Could be. But I don't want to say that, but I read an article the other day. Somebody was saying he should be in the lineup. This guy should be playing. And no doubt he could play. If he wanted to, and I get the feeling was that he was done. So I don't know. But anyway, I think the answer is this. I think they want to get used to having, I think to me, this signals one thing. The Yomiuri Giants have finally realized that Hideki Matsui is not going to come back from New York and manage their team.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that has been, lingering out there, let's just say, in the ethers. And so, yeah, I thought that this kind of put an end to that. I had an inkling, just one moment of thinking about that during this week when this situation occurred with Abe coming up on the bench. And I thought about, no 55, coming back. But I didn't even think about that seriously, because I thought it's too soon. Why, if the team like the Giants does this, the team, everybody around the team knows that this is going to be the talk of the town. Mm-hmm. So, you can't bring Abe up and you can't sneak him up onto the bench and then have nobody know. So, I mean, what was really the impetus behind this? And obviously, we have to start thinking about Hara and another retirement or stepping away from the team. And I still think it's too soon.
I think it is too, but I don't think it's far down the road. It could be this year for all I know. And as far as this team, I mean, this is a team that has made an art form of trying to find coaches and managers who were unqualified
And second baseman.
Hold on. I'm not going to go there. But who to find managers who are completely and coaches who are completely unqualified and putting them in the public eye as the face of the team. And, you know, the greatest example was hiring Shigeo Nagashima to replace Tetsuharu Kawakami. I mean, you know, the whole story was Kawakami is retiring. They held a gun to his head and said, you know, you can either sign your retirement paper, you know, you're either your signature or your brains will be on the retirement paper.
Wow, that's just awful.
No, but that's pretty much what they did. We had this discussion. I think we had this discussion with Bob Whiting a couple of years ago, and he knows a lot of the actors in that drama. And he said, yeah, Kawakami was absolutely, you know, he was gobsmacked that they would name this public figure as manager who had never managed and who basically had all the, you know, the intellectual wattage of a mosquito lamp.
Okay. All right. This is off the rails. That's what the Giants do.
They take, you know, they take these big public things and bringing Nagashima back and the whole thing 11 years ago when Mr. Kiyotake, first name forgotten, was the head of the Giants, and he tried and he lost a power grab with the owner, the emeritus owner Tsuneo Watanabe, who wanted to bring up Suguru Egawa as a coach, you know, basically to increase ticket sales. I mean, that was the whole thing of that.
So it's such a Giants thing.
I mean, they knew what they were doing, and it had to be obvious that the purpose of Abe was there was to sell him to the public.
All right. Well, this is not this topic that I had broached.
But it's the fun one, and
we'll be eaten up a bunch of time, so maybe we'll just revisit this next week. But
sorry.
In the meantime, one of the reasons that I have called the Central League race is not because the Giants are so good. It's because the other teams in the Central League don't seem to be able to sustain any kind of runs. And so that's why I made the call last week with more than 40 games left. But anyway,
without fanfare,
I'm thinking, and we'll just talk about that because I really wanted to talk about playoff baseball and what the Giants would look like in the Japan series, but we'll have to do that next week. But before we leave the Giants and go to the next topic, I'm just wondering who the media will select as the MVP. And I'm wondering, can Hayato Sakamoto beat out Kazuma Okamoto, who has, you know, the most RBIs and the most home runs in the league? But Sakamoto is such a pivotal player. But I think, you know, the media we've seen is with the monthly MVPs, you know, sexy numbers get you sexy awards. And so I'm just thinking Okamoto is going to get it, or they'll just go with the pitcher, Tomoyuki Sugano, the ace.
Yep. I think those are very likely. I don't see it being any of the other guys. I mean, they're all. I mean, Sakamoto is a great player, and he is. He had his career year last year. Everything clicked for him. That it doesn't click twice in a row is no big surprise or knock against him. Okamoto's just being Okamoto. He's just a wonderful player, and he's got a big smile, and he's going to find his way. He's still learning how to navigate professional waters on his own. When, as you know, Warren Cromartie said, basically the Giants did what Japanese teams do, which is if you've got a star, you make sure that they get the opinions of everybody, every guy who's ever had, you know, 1,000 hits in NPB to tell him what to do.
Yeah, but I did notice that a lot of the things that Warren Cromartie said on the show when you interviewed him for us were things that Okamoto was doing at the beginning of the season. So I did notice that, and hitting the ball, particularly hitting the ball to the opposite field with some power.
He's doing that. He is being... you know, I think he is growing, and I think that's the thing. I love him, and he's and of course, yeah, Sakamoto's done, but you know, but he's still the captain. So I don't, you know, it's going to depend on it is going to depend on the big numbers, and if it's, and you know, somebody could say, oh, they might split the vote because, you know, there might be somebody else who's a better player and they might win because the Giants split the vote. Forget it. They're not going to split the vote because the number of people are going to vote for the number of media people who report, who give a first place vote to somebody who's not on the pennant winner is going to be about two or three, a handful, five, six, maybe. It doesn't happen.
Right. All right. Let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the Eagles, who at the beginning of the season, I remember saying on the show that I had gone up to one of my coworkers frequently, maybe every day that I saw him, maybe. And I said, congratulations on winning the Pacific League pennant, even though we were 1 week into the season, because they were playing so well. They looked so perfect. Mm. Everything was going great. And obviously, Jabari Blash getting injured can be one of the starting points as to when they started to fall off and have struggles. But I don't, you know, I've said before on the show, no one person makes a team. He wasn't hitting for that great an average at the time. He just really gave him some pop. Stephen Romero had been hitting really well. They just, everything was just really going well. Daichi Suzuki was hitting well for them. The wheels were turning, but I did notice something after that first half a month, or just in June, their ERA was 3 as a team, and they didn't play all that many games in June. But then in July, the team ERA went to 4.65 and 5.23 in August. And it had been really high again in September, but they had a couple really good outings today and Saturday in Fukuoka that seemed to lower it a little bit, just under 5. I suspect that the strong offense was really hiding a poor pitching staff that we didn't really pay that much attention to because they were scoring so many runs. It really didn't matter. When the offense dried up, the pitching kind of got exposed. So what have you seen with the
I think that's accurate. I think, I mean, it was a top to bottom offensive onslaught. They were, I don't know. There's sort of like a Batman movie where all the arch villains have escaped and they're combining up to wreck Gotham City. That's what the Eagles looked like in the first month of the season. I was like, it was top to bottom. It was like they were playing like an all-star team. Daichi Suzuki was on fire. Romero was on fire. Jabari Blash, you said he doesn't hit for average, but he doesn't hit average.
Yeah, he wasn't hitting for that. Yeah,
yeah. He generally doesn't hit for average. He's a guy who draws, you know, one or two walks a day, and you know he'll get one hit, and half of the times it's an extra base hit. So that's Jabari Blash's game. But he was spelling Romero, and Hiroyuki Shimauchi was smoking hot, and you know just grinding it out as he does. And the nuke, the rookie catcher, Hikaru Ohto, was on fire. I mean, it was like nobody, it's almost like everybody who went out to the plate, you know, put on his superhero clothes. They were having quality at bats. And I think I think teams may have made adjustments to what they were trying to do. I think they were hyper prepared at the start of the season, and I think they've had a hard time keeping up with that a little bit, and the injuries, and you know, just natural, you know, performance. People who were lucky earlier are less lucky now. So I think the offense is not really hurting as much as they were just sort of on the best offense that team could put forth in the beginning of the season. The pitching has been up, has really not gotten. Hideaki Wakui is probably the poster boy for that, in the sense that the first three games he pitched, he was really bad. He won them all, but he was really bad.
And that's
illustration of your point. And then he was really good, you know, and he was lights out for about six games, and he's still been pretty good, but I still think he's got an issue with his finger or something that is troubling him that he can't spin the ball as well as he had been. They had that rock once a week, and Yuki Matsui was out of the bullpen, and the bullpen didn't work, and that didn't even seem to matter at the start of the season. That they
correct
closer, their chosen closer is now, I think he's back now, and he's working in long relief or something. And Alan Bucinets is closing, and he's doing okay. And so, it's sort of like they were hitting everything right except the pitching. I think the pitching is actually better now than it was at the start of the season, but the offense is more normalizing. You know, they're probably the second. I think they're the second best team in the league, but there's really no, I don't see any difference between them and the Fighters and the Lions and the Marines.
Yeah, their ERA for September at the moment is 4.75. That's the highest it has been for any month this season. So it's not necessarily the case that they're pitching better. It just they just have some better outings here and there. But when they're bad or when they're ineffective, they're ineffective. So
they've had some stinkers. I mean, join the club. They're also not a real deep rotation. You know, they're not a deep rotation. And this year we've seen I can't count them, because they're kind of fuzzy things, bullpen games, but the Eagles might lead both leagues in bullpen games.
Yeah. I can't count them either. I don't know. I just noticed that they just have, you know, starters, and then all of a sudden Tomohiro Andaku is out there throwing, and I'm like, geez, that was fast, you know. That was fast to give up on it. So yeah, it doesn't look like they're, it's a two-team race for the Pacific League playoff spots. But, you know, I'm not ruling anybody out, because if the Eagles get hot, I think they can go on a run. Because if the Lions really get hot again.
Well, they have, the things the Marines have, I mean, the Eagles have some things really going for them. Of course, Norimoto being out right now is, I didn't get to see much of Kishi's start today, so I don't really have a sense for where.
Yeah, I didn't see the actual pitching. I just looked up when the outs were happening, but
yeah, I didn't
see anything. He pitched fairly well.
Okay. He certainly knows what he's doing. So if he's got any semblance of command, he's going to, he can cause people some trouble even when he's got nothing. But Yuki Matsui has continued to look like, he's actually a starting pitcher, and that's good to see.
It is.
Okay. And the other guys, I mean, they've taken Wataru Karashima, who started the season in long relief, and now he's a starter again where he has been. And now he's about where we
expect. From long relief to short starter. Yeah,
exactly. Well, he's in there now. So, I think they have a chance, because first of all, Hideto Asamura is not the best player in the league. He's probably not one of the three best players in the league, but he's not far, and he certainly could have the best production in the league. He could easily have, you know, the best numbers in the league at the high end. He's just a scary good hitter. And Stefan Romero has been right behind him, and I love the rookies, and I love I do like the way Hajime Miki has put his team together. I mean, this is a team that it looks like it still should be missing pieces, but with Igor Umogi being healthy and Daichi Suzuki being healthy, I see them as a chance to, you know, even though they're actually their offensive and defensive totals are not as good as the other four teams in the middle, they would be my favorite of those four. I think they're the best of those four.
Yeah, and they're going up against Lotte in a series starting right this week.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, starting on Tuesday. So, yeah, they'll have I think it's a make or break kind of a series for them. They need to win the series, but that would only get them, you know, one game closer, obviously, if they only win the series. If they sweep, that would be a big step in the right direction. So that'll be fun to watch. Let's make a two-seam transition and talk about a guy you've wanted to talk about for a few weeks since he went on this long complete game streak of six games, and that's...
Well, before actually when the complete game streak was like two.
Oh, and that's you die. Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, no, another oh. Another zero, owner. Another goose yeah.
Egg. So, yeah, he tossed six consecutive complete games. And, you know, that was a team record. I don't know what the MPB record is because nobody, I guess he didn't get close enough for people to even bring it up.
Well, first of all, nobody counts complete game losses. I mean, they count them. It's still a complete game, but they don't care about them.
You got to win.
Exactly. I mean, this we had this game. You know, we had this discussion the other day with Steve Novosel on Twitter. He loved Marines, and he, you know, he said he was commenting that the Marine starter Tsuyoshi Ishizaki went five innings and was a losing pitcher. Well, it wasn't just him. The media was talking about how he was a losing pitcher without allowing a hit, and I had to point out that in Japan, no hitters. They don't count no hitters in which you allow a run.
Yep. Yeah. You talked about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, now what I noticed, early on, you know, I was sort of thinking, I haven't, as I've said before, the Dragons are one of those teams I typically don't watch a lot of.
Only when they're playing the Swallows.
That's not true. But they're not my go-to in interest level. I don't know why it is. I think the Buffaloes are kind of a more charming, if somewhat more intolerable lot. The Dragons in one respect tend to remind me more of the Marines as in being sort of lacking in star and, you know, in big stars. And so I find them to be less entertaining, but
So what is it that you want to
anyway? Anyway, I was really curious, you know, what is it that Yudai Ohno has? And I don't really know because I don't watch him. Okay, so I'm watching him week after week now, and I'm thinking, okay, that fastball, it doesn't look really good, but it is really fast. I mean, 145 kilometers per hour for a lefty right now. He's the fastest left-handed starter in Japan.
Yeah, and he'll bring it up there to 150 when he, you know, he's trying to.
Yeah, so he can do that. So he can, but that's not what's happened to him. Well, one thing that is interesting is, and I'm going to go into the discussion about why it is, but certainly technically, either health or technique, he's gradually improved his velocity with his fastball, which doesn't necessarily make it better, but he has. But the other thing that has I've noticed is that if you look at delta graphs and you see what's different is that his two seam. And again, I don't know whether it's a sinker. I don't know whether it's an American style two seam sinking fastball or a reverse curve sinker. They both
run this. Next time he's on, but
it's hard to tell because of his arm angle. To be really honest. Anybody who throws that kind of three-quarter stuff, especially lefties, because of the angle. Righties, it's easier for me because most of the TV, I would say all of the TV broadcasts, the camera is on the left field side of the backs of the hitter's background. So okay. You see the right-hander's arm angle straighter to the plate than you do the left-hander's. Okay. So it's really hard for me to pick up it's harder for me to pick up from that angle how much the left-hander's balls are running or breaking. But the combination of that sinking pitch and his fastball, which he is, I think, really spinning it more and more, is really hard for hitters to gauge those two. There was another pitch, but it's basically those two are his big pitches. And, you know, he throws other pitches as well, but those are the two. The big evolution for him is not only is he the fastest left-handed starter, but he probably throws his fastball more than any start, at least as much as any starting pitcher in Japan. So the extra velocity is big. The two seam works off that really well. Now, the other thing I've noticed is that the real interesting thing about him, the additional interesting thing about him, is that he's becoming a challenge the hitters in the zone pitcher.
Yeah, I have noticed. Well, I did notice that he was nibbling early on in the season and he was throwing a lot of pitches. And mm-hmm. then during this streak of consecutive complete games, he threw the most he threw were 128 pitches on July 31st. And that was to start the streak. And that was the game in which he gave up this massive home run to Munetaka Murakami of the Swallows. And then the Dragons fell behind early and they got him some runs, and then he ends up finishing the game. And I remember after he gave up that home run, which was an awful pitch, that he just settled in and started to focus on throwing a couple pitches, but getting them over the plate in the zones that he wanted to get them in instead of just putting them up there. And it just changed. That was the moment that changed him, it seemed.
Yeah, he's been a guy who, you know, it's funny because the guys who are good at getting hitters to chase mostly are guys who attack the strike zone. It seems counterintuitive, but the guys who throw more strikes are the guys who get more people to chase out of the zone.
Right.
And he's been just excelling at that routine. Basically gets ahead in the counts. When they get behind, they're just meat.
Yeah, expand the zone. So, yeah, he started this streak, like I said, July 31st against the Swallows. And I thought a fascinating matchup that we didn't get to talk about was September 8th when the Giants went to Nagoya Dome to play the Dragons and had their ace, Tomoyuki Sugano, on the mound, who had not lost a game. He's won every decision this season. And so he had a streak. And rarely do you see when two guys have, especially starting pitchers, really important streaks going, that both of them come out of the game with their streaks intact. Mm. So Ono went the distance. He lost the game, but he went the distance, and Tomoyuki Sugano won the game to extend his streak. And so I just was wondering, because Sugano is likely the Sawamura Award for Japan's best pitcher this year, I wondered during this stretch if Sugano was throwing more pitches or if Ono was throwing more pitches, because Ono had held all these complete games and Sugano did not. So I went through and I counted all the pitches. And since the 31st of July, the six games that Ono completed, he threw 680 pitches. Now his effort at his attempt to go seven complete games in a row died on Tuesday last week, when he only threw four innings at Hiroshima and gave up four runs and they just took him out. And I didn't blame him. He wasn't looking very good at all. But and that could be some fatigue. But then again, I counted up Sugano's pitches during that same period, and Sugano threw 760 pitches. So 80 pitches more for Sugano. That's like a whole game. Mm. So he was doing it efficiently, economically, pitching well. Like I said, the most he threw were 128 on July 31st, and the fewest pitches he used for a complete game were 112 on August 23rd. So this is a remarkable streak for Ono, and it's too bad the Dragons aren't competing, although I get the feeling they're really going to work hard to finish in the top three, because they can't afford, with their manager in his second season and talking about winning, I don't think they can afford to finish in the bottom half. So I think they're going to push hard to finish in the top half. And I think you're going to see all their guys, even Ono, pitching and not pitching for complete games and all that stuff, or for stats. They're going to be pitching for wins as we go finish out the season here.
Well, yeah, I hope so. I mean, I just love what I do. You know, he went from being a guy who I marveled at his success to a guy who I just love to watch pitch. So he's made my season much more interesting.
Mm. All right, guys. Well, we appreciate you sending in questions. We got a few more questions via Twitter. When I told people there wasn't going to be a guest for this week, someone said, well, are you asking for questions? And I said, we can always use questions. So we have some for next week, but we can always use more. So send in your questions to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast or on the Facebook page. Send us an MP3. We'd love to hear your voice instead of having me try to read your question out. Read it yourself. Mm-hmm. Ask it yourself.
Yeah. Do it yourself podcast. That's what I want.
There you go. And have you set up your next live event?
I have, and it's going to be the 29th of September.
All right. Sounds like fun. You haven't picked a game then, I assume.
No, it'll be no doubt will be a 6 p.m. Japan time, 5 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So for you night owls, I will say our game on the 13th, we were joined by former Nippon Ham Fighters pitcher Carlos Mirabal, who relayed some of his experiences in Japan and in Taiwan, and it was great fun.
Okay. All right. Hopefully we can get an interview for next week. Either way, we'll be back. We will talk to you then. Enjoy your baseball.
See ya.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with #HighHeat, and you'll hear from us again next week.